The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Good morning, Anthony. How are you? And Chodesh Tov.
Chodesh Tov, yes.
We were talking about sportswomen, and there was an incredible performance by Linoy Ashram, who won Israel's gold. Apparently the Russians aren't over the moon about that, Anthony.
The Russians are really not over the moon. So, yeah, I mean, Linoy Ashram won gold in the rhythmic gymnastics held over the weekend. She went into the competition as a favorite. She was already ranked number one in the world. For the Russians, this is a very difficult thing to have to swallow, because the Russians have really dominated the sport over the last 20 years or so, having won, I think, all the Olympic gold medals for the last 20 years, and still very, very strong in the sport. And in fact, the Russian twins, the Avarina twins, were really the main competition for Linoy. And as it turns out, in that final exercise, Linoy dropped her ribbon, which immediately attracts a penalty score. And in spite of dropping her ribbon during her exercise, she still came out ranked number one to take the gold medal. There was an appeal by the Avarina, by Dina Avarina in particular, who was less than a point, I think, behind Linoy in the final rankings. How could she win the gold medal when she dropped her ribbon in that exercise? Of course, we had to then remind Dina Avarina that she won gold in a previous world championship, also having dropped her ribbon in her exercise. So apparently this is not just something that happens to Linoy or to people who are not Russians. The final ranking apparently was really influenced by the level of difficulty of Linoy's exercise, where she really scored extra points because her exercises, all four of them that she carried out, were so difficult, had such a high level of difficulty associated with them, that she managed to score extra. So, of course, a great deal of excitement in Israel over this. A second gold medal for Israel in the single Olympics. Of course, we shouldn't forget the previous gold that we've already won in the form of Artem Dolgopyat, who won a gold medal for the men's gymnastics floor exercise. And of course, our bronze medalists in the form of Avishag Semberg, who won bronze in taekwondo, and the judo mixed team, who won also bronze for their events. So a very, very successful Olympic Games by Israeli standards, four medals all in all. It's the first time Israel has ever won four medals in a single Olympic Games, and of course only the second and third gold medals ever won by Israeli athletes, Gal Friedman being the first gold medalist for Israel back in 2004 at the Athens Olympic Games when he won gold in the windsurfing competition. So yeah, a great deal of excitement, and I think a very nice way to finish the Olympic Games. A little bit of disappointment in the judo ranks. They felt that some of the individuals were worthy of medals, none of whom came home with a medal in the end, but at least the team event managed to get us the bronze medal. But ultimately, I think a very, very nice achievement and a successful Olympic Games for Israel.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Anthony. And having watched a video on Linoy Ashram last night from Channel 12 News, the dedication that this woman puts into her craft is just mind-blowing. I think it's up to 10 to 12 hours a day she practices.
Well, I, first of all, before talking about Linoy's exercise regime, I'd also like to mention Nicole Zeligman, who was also in the final 10 in the final round of the rhythmic gymnastics. She ultimately was ranked seventh. And I think that her support and the support from the rest of the Israeli team really helped Linoy in achieving her gold medal. But yes, what you're saying is correct. I mean, Linoy has spent, I think, the last 2 years living physically at the Wingate Sports Center near to Netanya. She lives there. She trains there hours and hours a day with her coach. That's been her life, apparently, for the last 2 years, while she's been preparing for not only the Olympic Games, but indeed other competitions that she's attended along the way. So very, very dedicated indeed, and amazing precision, amazing athleticism, really a very, very admirable achievement that she's managed to take away, and especially given that this is a sport that's really been dominated over so many years, not only by Russians, but of course by Ukrainians, people who come from the former Soviet Union who seem to be very, very good at this. And of course, Linoy has absolutely no link at all to that particular part of the community. And in spite of that, she's come home with a gold medal. So
remarkable.
Very, very proud of her.
Anthony, we have to talk about the rockets fired at Israel from Lebanon on Friday. A significant escalation. Unpack that for us, and with particular concentration on the Druze response, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we had this escalation that really started on Thursday. A few rockets fell over the border into Israel on Thursday. The Israeli Defense Force decided that they were going to retaliate, as is the current policy, that no action goes without a reaction. And in this particular case, there was quite a substantial retaliation in the form of Air Force fire towards the locations where the rockets had been fired from on Thursday. And of course, this then solicited this fairly heavy barrage of rockets that were fired from the area of Har Dov, the Mount Dov area, from southern Lebanon. The Iron Dome is not generally activated unless the rockets that are incoming threaten populated areas, built up areas. The Iron Dome does know how to separate out rockets that are going to be falling in areas which can't harm anybody or do any damage. And yet Iron Dome was activated on Friday, and there were apparently a number of rockets that didn't even make it over the border, a few of those, some that did fall in open areas. Fortunately, ultimately, no damage, no injuries were reported, even though there were people in bomb shelters. Sirens were blaring in northern Israel on Friday as this barrage of rockets were fired. Since then, it just seems like things have dissipated. There were consultations held with Defense Minister Benny Gantz and with the IDF Chief of Staff Aviv Kochavi, along with Prime Minister Naftali Bennett, about what would be done next and what their response would be. But ultimately, there seems to have been a general calming of the situation.
Anthony,
it's interesting.
Why now? Why now? I mean, Lebanon is a failed state. It's bankrupt. It's falling apart. Why fire the rockets now?
It seems that the initial barrage may well have been fired by Palestinians or people who are linked to Hamas, in particular in Gaza, but who are stationed in the southern Lebanon. That seems to have been the initial outbreak. I don't think that Hezbollah were necessarily involved in the initial fire of rockets, but because the IDF responded in the way that they did, and they responded also towards Hezbollah positions, we then found this response coming from Hezbollah on Friday in order to make sure that, you know, no action would go without a reaction on their side as well. They wanted to be sure that, you know, to show that they were not going to simply take things lying down, as it were. And so they fired this barrage of rockets. But it seems to have been fairly carefully orchestrated not to create a massive event. It seems as if they just wanted to show that they wouldn't allow things to happen without a response, but without causing a greater escalation. That's the way that I see things at the moment. So neither the IDF nor Hezbollah necessarily want to see more of an escalation. And I think that the responses were geared in such a way not to cause a further escalation. Certainly that's what we've seen right now, that things have calmed down in the north. So I just think it was a case of the initial rockets that were fired were sort of uncoordinated. And then everybody was drawn in to be forced to react in order not to look too passive in the situation.
So you don't think then this is an attempt to open a second front against Israel in the north?
I don't see it like that at the moment, certainly not right now. I think Hezbollah have also had their work cut out for them. They've been very, very involved in the Syrian war. I don't think that they would necessarily wish to open a front with Israel right now in the north. Although, you know, the words from Nassim Khasrallah and other leaders of Hezbollah have suggested that at some point in the future, Israel should expect to see a front opened. But Nasrallah right now is showing a little bit, I think he's just showing bravado more than anything else, wanting to just make sure that Israel understands that he is there and that his forces will not be drawn and will not be made a fool of But I think you're right. The state of Lebanon right now does not support the idea at all of any front being opened right now on Israel's northern border.
Anthony, I've got a question. The chief of the UN has come out saying all parties must exercise restraint. Now, just thinking about this, if somebody was coming at me with a knife, trying to kill me, I'm not going to exercise restraint. What is going on? Why?
Well, these statements by not only the head of the UN, the UN Secretary General, but indeed others as well, are ones that we've already become accustomed to hearing. Everybody should exercise restraint. So that really means I'm not pointing my finger at one party or another. I'm not blaming either party for anything. So I don't want to be drawn in to be criticized or to be seen to favor one party over another. But I do want the situation to calm down. So therefore, I'm not going to mention any names, but everybody should just calm down. That's, I think, the way that these things are termed, in order to just to try to calm the situation without necessarily being accused of picking out one party being a favorite rather than the other. So, of course, nobody expects you to sit around watching while people come towards you and attack you. But let's not forget that the UN are involved here as well, because they are supposed to be peacekeepers along that northern border that Israel has with Lebanon. So to the extent that there's an outbreak of violence, even this small barrage that we saw on Friday, the UN are implicated, because they are then clearly not doing their job somewhere in order to keep the peace, in order to make sure that all the parties are adhering to the rules. And hence, you know, the UN is obliged to say something in order to try to protect themselves without necessarily being seen to point their fingers at anybody in particular.
Anthony, do you read any significance into the issue of the Lebanese Druze saying to those Hezbollah fighters, no more, you're not fighting here from our areas and putting our populations at risk?
Well, I think, it's very interesting that they've come out and made these statements, because, you know, we've known for the longest time that not only Hezbollah, but of course Hamas as well, like to fight from within civilian areas, using civilians effectively as human shields, knowing full well that Israel will not fire missiles towards civilian areas, even if they are being used for military purposes. So I think that the Druze in Lebanon are quite angry with Hezbollah that they're using them as human shields. I think this is a lot about protecting the Druze community themselves, feeling a little nervous that it might draw fire towards their communities from the Israeli side, but also just saying, you know, we would like to live in peace, and there seems to be no reason right now to have an outbreak of violence, and certainly not from where we live.
Anthony, thank you so much for your input this morning. That takes us to 8:00. Too much to talk about, but we'll catch up with you again tomorrow.
Have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much.
God bless. Bye-bye.